Some people say, man, you've got such a great memory. Well, it was because it was a very important, intense part of my life. And I remember it so well because every day that I left the house, I didn't know if I was coming back.
I'm Jonathan Walton, and this is Cocaine Air, the TJ Dominguez story, episode 7, where I sit down with executive producer Evan Goldstein and discuss all the incredible, unbelievable TJ Dominguez stories that ended up on the cutting room floor. If you listen to my other podcast, Queen of the Con, then you know who Evan Goldstein is. Last time you heard from Evan, we were running from the cops after trespassing onto shoplifting queen Michelle Mack's gigantic mansion on a hill outside San Diego.
I hear the cops. Dude, I think we should go. Dude, do you think they called them for us?
I don't know, maybe.
We're running.
We're running.
Because you heard the sirens, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's roll.
We're running from the cops.
Let's roll.
You thought you were getting arrested that day.
Yeah, I thought it would be county lockup, call my wife.
I love the fear in your eyes.
I think we both had fear in our eyes.
I did, but mine was mixed with excitement. Like, this will be cool for the podcast. Yeah, get arrested.
I know. You were giddy at the time. You were like half laughing.
Like, what are they going to do? You trespassed on this shoplifting queen's mansion? Yeah. And then what?
I know. We did look very suspicious, though, in retrospect, wearing, like, disguises as
I don't think suspicious. I think we blended in. We looked like city inspectors. We had the hard hat, the construction vest.
Clearly we're not. So if cops came.
Right. How do we explain that?
It's like, why are you wearing this? It's just like.
This is America. I can wear whatever I want.
You ever think you're going to be friends with Pablo Escobar's main cocaine smuggler?
No, but here's the thing. I don't even think of him as a cocaine smuggler. It's weird. To me, he's the victim of a con who fought back and got his money back. Like, to me, he's a freaking hero. You know, like, who's done that? No one.
Yeah.
I got conned, never got my money back. I've talked to hundreds of victims of cons. They never get their money back.
Like, that's the most amazing thing for me, listening to everything that he was talking about and all the stories and kind of how it worked. It's just how detail oriented he is. There's oil tycoons and we want to show you, you know, that there's a certain kind of theatricality to everything. There's a certain flair for the dramatic. You just get the sense that he could kind of do anything.
Yeah.
He could just figure it out no matter what it is. He should be the new Dos Equis most interesting man in the world.
He really should.
Yeah.
Are you listening, Dos Equis?
Yeah,
he'd
seriously.
Be great. I'm TJ Dominguez.
I'm TJ Dominguez.
I flew coke for Pablo Escobar. I had 30 Lamborghinis.
But if you want a cool, crisp.
Yeah. One of the interesting perspectives TJ brings to this table is he knew Pablo Escobar, like knew him personally, like hung out with him a bunch of times.
It's so crazy.
From what he says, he's not how you think a murderous drug lord would be. What kind of guy was Pablo Escobar?
Really a family guy, if you could say that.
That's such a funny answer to that question.
I know, it's crazy, huh? Really, really
was. He's a family guy.
He really was. He really was. He was a very simple guy. Didn't wear no gold chains. Didn't wear Rolex. Blue jeans, polo, just regular loafers, tennies. Never, if you ever met him, you would not believe that that's Pablo Escobar. He was very, very well protected and loved in Medellin. Every night he'd walk around without the bodyguards and sit down there and pass out money.
This totally tracks with what I know of Pablo Escobar. He was like a saint in Colombia, in Medellin. Yeah. He paid for people's surgeries. He paid for kids' education. He bought them gifts. He was like Mother Teresa in male form. He was so kind and generous. Everybody loved him. They didn't care that he was this notorious drug lord. Like, he could walk around without security guards. No one there was trying to kill him.
Yeah, it's like cocaine Robin Hood.
It's like,
it just, you know, sell cocaine to the rich and give to the poor. You could very easily say that it was a lot safer probably doing cocaine in the 80s than it is now with all the fentanyl all the...
I worry for kids now.
You know, it's like...
you can experiment and just die.
Die.
Because just a pinhead size of fentanyl can kill anyone.
I mean, those were the good old days. But what was not so good about those days, especially if you're flying, there was no GPS.
Oh, yeah.
You got to rely on your peepers. You got to look out the plane window, the cockpit window, cockpit windshield, and decide how you're going to get to where you're going just by what it looks like in the clouds and whatever.
Yeah, just by visuals. Yeah.
So how TJ managed to stick the landing every time in Colombia, that runway, and I have a picture of this on cocaineair.com. If you click gallery, there's a picture of the secret runway in Pablo Escobar's secret lair. It's like surrounded by trees, like you can barely see it.
Yeah.
How he landed a plane each and every time on that runway is just a miracle without dying. So many pilots crashed trying to do it.
Yeah.
There's no beacon back in those days. There's no GPS back in those days. You know, basically flying by the seat of your pants. I've landed the airplane 10 times with bullet holes all over it. And I'm going to go and do it again tomorrow. Fear is not part of my chemistry.
Yeah.
We're all going to die one day. When we're flying in Colombia in the jungle, there's Apache helicopters that have been donated from the United States to the government of Colombia to fight the war on drugs.
The war on drugs.
The war on drugs was a hell of a war that was basically under the radar. But people lost their lives, and that stuff didn't make the newspapers because we had it coming. We were bad people. That's the way they thought of us, you know?
Yeah.
So here we are because we're bogeys. We're in a foreign country, and we have military looking for us. You can't fly high, so you got to fly under the radar, under 500 feet. So we're on the deck. We're on the treetop level. We're flying into the jungle. Different from a lot of other people that smuggled, we were flying 2 hours into the country of Colombia. We weren't picking up on the shore. So here we are going through the jungles at 500 feet or low or lower to try to stay away from the visual of helicopters, military. And at that point, you're everybody's enemy. Look, the authorities want to arrest you. The bad guys, they want to bring you down. I've landed the airplane many, many times with bullet holes in the airplane where the bullets hit the duffel bags. We put 20, 30, depending on the packaging, inside a military duffel bag. Well, that's what stopped the bullet continuing to go through the airplane.
And even just finding that landing strip is next to impossible.
Next to impossible. What we would have to do is we would land in the beginning of going, penetrating the airspace of Colombia, we would land and pick up a native local pilot that would fly by the seat of our pants. One incident on the way down there, the ceiling was low, the clouds were heavy, and we couldn't find the landing strip. Okay, I remember talking on the radio. Light them up, light them up, light them up. They are lit. They are lit. Can't find it. Heavy cloud formation, fog. Can't find the landing strip. Can't dip down under the clouds because you got tall trees. And this is just a cutout, just a strip. It's not like a desert. Trees everywhere. So, so I said, light something. So they lit some tires. We see the black smoke coming up, and then we followed the black smoke down, and we could make out the lights. We landed the airplane. After that, I said, this shit's never gonna happen to me again. So I went to my electronic guy, my what I used to call after the James Bond movie, Q, and I said, Q, man, look what happened. We almost died out there. God damn, we're running out of fuel. And they're telling us, you know, we hear you. We know you're here, but we can't land. We can't find the landing strip. How can I correct that? And he said to me, simple. We'll just make an airport out there. I said, what do you mean simple? How are we gonna make an airport out there? So we put a piece of equipment that would send a signal that my airplane would follow. This is basically how airplanes and airports work. You follow a directional signal. So what we would do is, right before we left, I radioed down to Colombia. They cranked up the electric plant, they turned on the transmitter, and then my airplane would hone in on that signal and follow that. Now we can go to sleep, the airplane's gonna be on automatic pilot following that signal and come right down to that strip. And that's how we corrected that problem.
The thing that fascinates me is just, he's a problem solver. You know, it's you could put him in anything and he'll just figure it out.
And I think people forget a plane load of cocaine is so valuable.
Mm.
I didn't realize how much it went for on the street. Each plane load of cocaine was worth $30 million wholesale. Wow.
In the 1980s, cocaine sold for as much as $600 a gram. And do you know how many grams are in a ton in a plane load?
Huh.
900,000.
Wow.
There are 900,000 grams in a plane load. That's why Pablo Escobar is paying him $5 million a trip.
Yeah.
Because it's worth like $540 million on the street. So yeah. $5 million is like nothing. He should have paid him $10 million a trip. Whether it's cocaine or anything else, that much weight of anything in a plane is not easy to deal with.
Just the flight, like aerodynamics alone.
And even putting it in and taking it out, you need manpower.
You don't forget what I'm doing, whether I'm doing marijuana or I'm doing cocaine, we're talking about a long ton, which is 2,220 pounds. That's an awful lot of weight. I don't care what you call it. It could be cabbages. It's still a lot of weight. You need manpower to offload that off the airplane.
I'm so hungry.
If you're like me, then what's for dinner can be a complicated question to answer. I thank my lucky stars I found Omaha Steaks. Dinner's handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And the quality of these steaks is just out of this world, better than anything I've ever bought in a supermarket. They've got ribeyes for special occasions, juicy burgers for a cookout, grilling chicken, seafood, and gourmet franks. Omaha Steaks has what you want. They even have delicious sides, dessert, and more. So a great dinner is minutes away. Steakhouse quality without the steakhouse prices. Your family will think dinner took hours, not minutes. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Okay, so I've never been a huge weed person, mostly because I think dispensaries are a little overwhelming and pretentious. That's just me. You do you. But there's this company called Mood, Mood.com, that's changing the way people can buy cannabis. You know how most dispensaries make you choose between strains with ridiculous names and you have no idea which one's for you? Well, that's what Mood.com figured out. And by the way, you can get 20% off your first order with promo code Walton. If you go to Mood.com and click Shop by Mood, it'll tell you which strain does what. Want to be more social at a party? There's a flower for that. Need to focus and get work done? There's a flower for that. Want to melt into your couch and watch movies? Yep, there's a flower for that too. And here's the part few people realize. It's now 100% federally legal to have really great bud shipped right to your door. It's third-party lab tested and arrives in a discreet box. Best of all, everything's backed by Mood's 100-day satisfaction guarantee. And like I said, you can get 20% off with code Walton. So head to Mood.com and get 20% off your first order now.
You're sitting there for 8 or 9 hours in a small cockpit. You know, that's how long it takes to go deep into Colombia and back to the Bahamas. And you're all clammed up. You're all like, you know, folded. And you just can't jump back there like a deer and start grabbing these duffel bags. They're army duffel bags that we use with 30, 20, depending on the packaging of the cocaine, and flip them out, because they're like 80 pounds, you know? So you just can't do that. So you need a crew to offload the airplane. When we land short, and when we land short, we cut one engine, which is the side that has the door to the airplane. We cut that engine so the crew doesn't get chopped up by an engine. And now we have a perimeter. Even though I'm paying for this, I have a perimeter of machine guns around me. Why? I got 30 million reasons why I'm telling you that I could be robbed. And if I'm robbed, I'm dead, because I don't have $30 million to pay Pablo for something that I can't explain. You know, because you have to explain what happened to that product. So I have a perimeter of machine guns around me, and then I have a pickup truck or a van that will pull up. And then I have my other crew on the radios giving me signals to land. One light up front, one light in the back. We land in between the two lights. Cut one engine, keep one engine running in case we need to move fast. We don't have to start the other engine.
So that's fascinating. The plane's on the ground. They turned off one propeller so the guys can unload the coke and not get their heads or arms chopped off by the prop. But they leave the other propeller running.
in case they need to fly out of there quickly.
Yeah, just to get out of Dodge. He's always trying to prepare for things. You know, fortune favors the prepared.
True, but there are some things that you cannot prepare for.
Severe storm striking South Florida.
The hardest thing we had to conquer was really the weather. Because when you got swells out that are 8, 10 feet or higher, you know, I lost people's lives. You know, guys that were my guys that I lost to the weather. The weather, you know, speedboats hitting the waves and crashing, losing my guys, being eaten by sharks, losing the load. So the weather was a factor. If the weather was good, we're coming into Miami, then what we would do is, if it was a sports fishing vessel, for example, I would bring in the boat ahead of time. I would then have the boat at the marina. The captain with the boat would have a first mate. Everything fit the part, the white outfit, the whole thing. Now that captain of the vessel didn't get his hands dirty. I had two mechanics flown in to take that boat apart. The floors came up, part of the engine came off, and then inside either the fuel or the water tank, there would be a cell. And the cell would be protected by a barrier of either fuel or water. It would be like a donut. And in that center would be 500 kilos or more of cocaine. So then when the mechanics put the boat back together again, then the captain would come on board and bring the boat back as a return on a charter. Fishing charter. And then we had the big fish, you know, the big multi-million dollar houses. He would dock the boat there, jump off the boat. He would leave. And then my crew of mechanics would come in, take the boat apart again. And it would be taken apart during the day because at nighttime, you're stealing something.
Yeah.
Logical.
Absolutely. You see a bunch of guys taking a boat apart at night, you think, what is happening here?
Let me call the cops. They're breaking into my neighbor's boat.
Yeah.
So during
the daytime, they're just fixing a boat.
Yeah, we bring in like a washing machine. I bring in some big coolers. And as we're replacing a refrigerator or a washing machine, these are just things that I use to store 50 kilos, 100 kilos, back and forth, back and forth. Nothing's getting fixed. Everything's just getting offloaded to give you something to look at.
The theater involved is just spectacular.
Exactly.
So to the observer who doesn't know what you're doing,
right in front of your eyes,
it looks like you're swapping out refrigerators, swapping
right
out a washing machine for these rich people's boats.
Yeah. Working on the turbo, working on this, the toolboxes, big toolboxes, you know, the cocaine. There were no tools in there.
So the washing machine's got cocaine.
Yeah, everything had cocaine.
The refrigerator's got cocaine. The big toolboxes got cocaine.
Yeah, sofa, cocaine.
Sofa, cocaine.
Yeah, that was it. To give you, and needless to say, I brought back lobster, brought back mahi-mahi for you, grouper, to keep you happy. Hey, just came back from a charter in the Bahamas. Here, we want some groupers?
Wow, thanks.
And these are neighbors. These are looky-loos that you're just keeping at bay.
Yeah, and now, these are not townhouses. These are multi-million dollar house.
That you own?
That I own or I lease, depending on the location. At the beginning, I'm buying them. Then later on, I got a little wiser and realized that if I lose this damn thing, I don't need to own it. I need to lease it under a corporation that's got nothing to do with me. Different name.
Yeah.
So I came up with different, you know, I had a team of lawyers that worked on a lot of this stuff for me.
And you call the houses windows.
Windows, openings.
Why do you call the houses windows?
Because a window is an opening. And all it is just an opening to come in. Just an opening to come in. There's nothing that stays in that house. That is not a safe house. Somebody could call it a safe house. But when I'm coming in with a speedboat and I'm offloading. Now, when I come in with a speedboat or a sports fishing vessel, you have a seawall, right? So let's say I'm coming in with a speedboat into that house. So I come in. The boat that's a shadow boat is going to the marina. The loaded boat's going to the house. Again, here's a footnote that I just thought of back in the day. As I'm coming into the house, we're running 454s at the beginning, big speedboats. And these boats have open exhaust system. They'll reverberate every window in your house, okay? You're coming in around 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. a lot of loud noise. So I said, this is really not going to work out very good for me. So I came up with exhaust system that went into the water that would open and redirect the exhaust into the water. So as I'm coming into the house, what you heard was bloop, 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 bloop. Now I could actually come into the seawall with the engines running. Before that, I was turning them off because it's just too loud. So now as we come up against the seawall, I got a crew inside the house, okay? Four guys. Their job is to offload the boat. Now I'm gonna climb off the boat. When I climb off the boat, I'm shaking like a leaf, right? Adrenaline flow. You know, we're here, but we're not here yet. It's not over until it's over. Get it off the boat. So I want some fresh legs. These guys climb off the boat. Now they gotta carry inside that house a ton of cocaine. So now another captain jumps on the speedboat and he takes that speedboat away from that house. He'll take that speedboat to another marina, which I know the owner of the marina. The boat will sit there in the morning. It will get taken off in a trailer and put inside a warehouse for storage and to be gone over mechanically. Then the cocaine will sit in that house that night. And the reason why that night, I don't move stuff during nighttime. I move everything during traffic. So then tomorrow morning, when the sun comes up and people are making their coffee and they're going to work, that's when we move our cocaine with a chase car behind it. It'll be either a van or it'll be in big Lincoln Town car with, you know, giant trunk. And what I would do to those cars, because we're putting 200 kilos back there, 400-500 pounds, right? Even if it's a brand new car, it's going to drop the bumper. We got to solve this problem.
Jonathan Walton here from Queen of the Con. Getting scammed completely changed the trajectory of my entire life. And when the man you're about to meet got scammed, it changed the trajectory of his entire life too.
By day, I owned and operated the largest Lamborghini dealership in the world. But by night, I flew tons of cocaine for Pablo Escobar.
This is the greatest story that's never been told because this guy's been in prison.
You're out of prison, what, 2 days now?
Yeah, 3 days.
And here we are talking.
Listen to Cocaine Air wherever you get your podcasts.
So here, you gotta think like a cop. Okay, I'm a cop, right? I'm looking at a brand new car and I'm looking at one driver or two drivers in the front seat, but I'm looking at this tailgate that's dragging, touching the floor. I'm gonna sit there and say to myself, what the hell do they have in their trunk that's making that car so heavy? It's a new car, it's not like the shocks are shot. So being a car guy, I came up with the idea of putting air shocks into that car. So I took all the vehicles that we used to move the cocaine, brought them to my dealership. Nobody knew this.
Lamborghini dealership.
Yeah, my Lamborghini dealer. Why am I working on a town car? I happen to be a friend of mine, man. You know, I'm just doing a favor for a guy, crazy guy, wants to put air shocks in this goddamn thing. I don't know why. You know, nobody wants me to do it, so I'm helping him out. Well, the whole purpose behind it was I put a hidden compressor, air compressor, in the engine compartment with hoses running into a little hidden dial. I take the glove compartment off the car. Inside, in back of the glove compartment, there'd be a little button and a level to show left, you know, up and down. So this little level is basic math, you know, 2 and 2 is 4. This little water level, today they probably have an app for all this, but back in those days they didn't. So I got the little level sitting there and I got this little compressor. So we turn on the compressor. And what this compressor does is it sends air to the rear shocks and it races the rear. So now that I got 200 kilos, let's say for example, on the trunk of the car and the bumper is like off the floor, you know, just barely. Now I turn on this compressor, I look at the little level, and when that little bubble's in between those two hatch marks, I'm good. Now the car is sitting level. Now I put my driver in there and I send them on the way. And now it's a car that blends in. And that happens during the daytime, 9 to 5.
This never occurred to me that if you put hundreds of pounds of coke or marijuana in the trunk of a car, it's gonna weigh it down.
Yeah, sure.
But after hearing this from TJ, I notice it now. I just saw yesterday, this big car, it was a Lincoln,
And the trunk was like weighed, like it was like, I'm low. Like, what's in that trunk?
Yeah, what's in the trunk? What's so heavy in the trunk?
It made me wonder.
Yeah, it's interesting.
They didn't have a compressor.
Yeah, now I'm going to start looking for it.
I notice it. Once you point it out, it's like you can see. And again, maybe they weren't doing anything illegal. Maybe it was like bricks from Home Depot.
Yeah, building it could be anything, but maybe not.
But yeah, it definitely draws your attention if you're authorities, if you're law enforcement, if you're a cop looking for the unusual, it's unusual.
Yeah, why are you riding so low in the back?
Yeah, maybe they're riding dirty. The other interesting thing TJ talks about is something I never even considered. I thought cocaine was cocaine, like a white powder. But as he explains here, there's a lot of different types of coke. It's like chocolate. You got the dark chocolate, the white chocolate, the milk chocolate, the this chocolate, the one with peaches.
Yeah, different flavors. Flavor of the month. You get a little vanilla. You could get a mango chili lime, cocaine.
Because as the cocaine is shipped over here, it has different labels. People come up with their own names to tag the cocaine. Why, you would ask me, do they do that? Because it might have a different process for finishing. Some might be with ether, some might be with gasoline, some might be with diesel, finer cocaine. Not that it's any better or worse, the appearance, it's really where it's at, but they're all pure cocaine, 98%, 98, you know, it's gonna burn pure. So, but it has different appearances. So if I have a lab that I'm using ether, cosmetically, it's very pretty looking. It's pearlescent, looks like fish scale. Well, I'm going to charge a little more money because my clientele maybe is like, you know, the big movie stars or celebrities, and they don't want this yellow stuff that's kind of like, you know, gum. So yeah, I'm going to get more money from mine. So I'm going to label my cocaine. I'm going to call it, and this, some of the names that you see are hilarious. FBI is one brand that we use, you know. So it'll be FBI, it'll be DEA, it'll be Foodie, one that stands out. And and Pablo would tell me what brand to pick my coke from. He would say, pick your 350 pieces from DEA or FBI or Foodie or from Lucky. That's another brand that they use, Lucky.
I had no idea coke had brand names.
What have you ever thought, how would you try to brand your cocaine?
I'd call mine Euphoria.
Ooh, yeah, that sounds good.
Right?
Snow Bunny.
Leave it to the straight guy. Snow Bunny. Sounds like a Playboy centerfold.
Yeah.
So what's interesting, TJ didn't do this alone, right? He had a team of people around him. You're only ever as strong as your weakest link. Mm. And in the end, it was Jack who brought TJ down. The pilot who taught him how to fly and became a fixture in his organization, yeah. And then turned on him when he got arrested and served him up to the feds. And, you know, Jack was the weakest link in that case.
It was his Fredo.
Yeah, Jack was his Fredo.
Yeah.
I don't even know The Godfather, but I'm going to go along with that. I know it's a big movie, and I tried to watch it. It just bores me.
Yeah, well.
Why don't I care?
Don Corleone knew it was his brother Fredo that sold him out, and he gives him the kiss of death. I know it was you, Fredo.
You're nothing to me now. You're not a brother. You're not a friend. I don't want to know you or what you do.
Jack was his Fredo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. So you bring a lot to the table. It's like Cocaine Air. I couldn't have done it without you. You made it a lot better. I mean, I could have done it without you, but a lot of the genius lines you've heard in Cocaine Air that I said were written by Evan Goldstein. I'll give you credit. Like in episode 2, the whole Star Wars stuff. I was just starting with, and Star Wars is popular in the movie theaters, and I moved on. But you're like, and here's only Obi-Wan Kenobi and the drug-smuggling Jedi. And like, you have all these brilliant lines, so I thank you. I mean, I'm better because of you, and this Cocaine Air is more interesting because of you, so thank you.
It's just, you know, this guy is so fascinating to listen to. It's so interesting, and he's such a born storyteller, too. Just kind of how he kind of takes you through and kind of puts you there. You know, it's not just like telling you what happened. It's telling you how it feels, what he's thinking, what he's seeing, all that kind of stuff that, you know, it kind of puts you there and it helps you imagine like, oh my God, this was absolutely insane.
Yeah. One of his main guys when he was, you know, on the rise and at the pinnacle of his cocaine career was this guy named Yayo, who he describes what Yayo means and how he met him.
Yayo was Cuban from the Boatlift, Mario Boatlift. He was let go from Castro. He had been in Cuba for murder. Yeah, 7 years he was doing for murder when Castro opened up the gates and said, go to the United States.
For Fidel Castro, it was tantamount to an act of genocide. With one fell swoop, he rid Cuba of thousands and thousands of undesirables. He emptied his prisons. He cleared the bums off the streets of Havana. Murderers, thieves, perverts, prostitutes, the retarded, crippled, the winos, all were rounded up, sent to Mariel Harbor, and put aboard boats bound for Miami.
So Yayo was that kind of guy. Hardcore, would just as soon shoot you as say hello to you. And when I said to Yayo every once in a while, man, that guy really pisses me off. I don't like him. I don't want the guy shot, Yayo. Okay, understand. I'm just saying I don't like him. I didn't say I want you to shoot him. So I had to be a little careful with you regarding that. I don't want him to, okay, dude, I took care of your problem. I didn't say I had a problem. I just said I didn't like the guy. That was Yayo. And Yayo means cocaine, by the way, in the slang world. You know, like they'd say, perico is another term that the Cubans used. And perico is translated into parrot. And you would sit there and say, why parrot? Well, simply because the joke back in those days was that if you did cocaine, you wouldn't stop talking. So you were like a parrot. So that's how the name parrot to define doing cocaine came about.
His nickname was Cocaine, and he's helping you with your cocaine.
Good with my cocaine.
Appropriate.
Yeah.
So this was really kind of just the tip of the iceberg of all the stuff that got left on the cutting room floor. The stories TJ told that I didn't have time to include in the main episode, so we're going to include them here. They're not any less fascinating or interesting. We just ran out of time. You know, I was trying to keep each episode a half an hour, which is the sweet spot, according to research. So I didn't have time for them, but there are some incredible stories. This man's lived an incredible life. Stay tuned next week for a whole other episode of TJ's life stories that ended up on the cutting room floor. Some are super fascinating, like his prowess with the ladies.
Ooh.
Right? He had so many women.
Oh, man.
And they kind of, it's not, again, I defend TJ. It doesn't seem to be his fault. They kind of threw themselves at him.
Money, power, respect.
Right? They come. It's like moths to a flame.
Yeah. Money, money, money.
To see some incredible photographs documenting TJ's life, go to cocaineair.com. And if you're enjoying Cocaine Air, please hit that share button and text it to your friends and family right now. And if you feel comfortable, leave us a 5-star review. Reviews really help other listeners find us. Cocaine Air was created, written, and executive produced by me, Jonathan Walton, for Jonathan Walton Media. Executive producers, Evan Goldstein, and the inimitable TJ Dominguez. Audio engineering by me, Jonathan Walton. Sound design and editing for this episode was done by Mike Smith. And the Cocaine Air cover art is by Bobby Animation. We've got a lot of fascinating untold stories like Cocaine Air coming down the pike at Jonathan Walton Media, so subscribe and keep an ear out.